Hello listeners, and welcome to the AfriWater platform, where we look to celebrate African history, people and culture by telling our story. As always, our hope is that it fills you with enough curiosity to go and do your own deeper research. Karibu to any new listeners to the AfriWetu world. We invite you to check our previous AfriWetu episodes, which can be found on this podcast platform. Thank you so much for tuning in. Today we are back in the west of our continent for part two, journeying back to meet this special Ife kingdom, especially to our Yoruba. A shout out to you and to my West Africans out there. AfriWetu is here, back on your shores. I apologize in advance for the mispronunciation of the words, which you know will definitely happen. Now, before I go into it, please, please remember to visit us on our socials. Our handle is at AfriWetu across all the platforms, where we post interesting facts, stories, updates, and links for further study for all of you lovely people. And please, please, please remember to tell your families and friends about us. Yep. Now, just sit back and enjoy the journey. An interesting fact to start with in this part is the name of the Ife Kingdom's capital city, Ife Ife. As we heard in part one, the literal meaning is place of dispersion. And to date, it is the oldest Yoruba city dating back to the 500 BC. And it still holds a very sacred place for the people and is recognized as an ancestral home. For those of you who have yet to listen to part one, first of all, where were you? Of this very special civilization, AfriWetu has thought of you. So here is like a very, 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 very brief summary of what we talked about. Brief because obviously you shall tune in to listen to part one right after you finish this episode, yes? So in the first part, we covered the origin story and the foundations of the Ife dynasties. We then got to meet the royals. We got to see the drama that was amongst them. Yet even despite that, we experienced the growth of this kingdom. Our next stop was to hear a little bit more about the Ife society before closing out with understanding the religion and its significance. It was really quite a trip, I promise you. And before we continue, as usual, you know what I'm going to ask you, right? So let's pull out those maps, okay? So as we said in part one, the Ife Kingdom is in an area that is today's modern day Nigeria. It was southwest of the Isaber and along the Guinea coast. It also controlled a lot of the rainforest in the west of the Isaber, and its impact was felt much further afield, as we saw in part one and we'll see in part two. So, this first section is the art and culture. So let's get right into it, okay? The Ife Kingdom is home of some of the best sculptures and artifacts crafted from materials ranging from iron, clay, stone, glass beads, you name it. And this work is recognized and is celebrated globally. In fact, so artistic and so beautiful and so well crafted and mastered was this work that, can you imagine, the foreigners to our continent were so impressed that they refused to believe it was actually Africans. I mean, really, honestly. Anyway, enough about that. Let's go back to our art and culture. When it comes to the art and the culture of Ife, it is well known and it is famed for it. With a true respect and admiration for the artisans' skills and their ability to manipulate and craft using the different materials such as clay, brass, glass, beads, and so on and so forth. A tradition that has actually been in Ife since the 9th century and other African civilizations for centuries. The city of Ife from around AD 700 to around AD 900 was the place to be for artists. Creativity flowed as beautiful works were created, and this continued well into the 1500 AD. This did not mean that the Ife art died, though, at that time. Studies indicate that the people may have migrated to new lands and took their skills with them to the civilizations of Benin and Owo, for example. And it is there that they themselves also adopted this artistry. So let's take a closer look at the different materials used not just to create beautiful works for the sake of art, but also as part of culture and service in Ife. The terracottas. We shall start with the famous terracottas. Now, for those of you in the back, terracotta is very simply any kind of fired clay, but in general sort of like an object which is made from fairly porous clay that when fired assumes a color ranging from a dull orangey almost to red and is usually left unglazed. Now when it comes to Ife, Nok, Benin, Owo and many others in this region, the workmanship is amazing. The works can be found in museums and are lauded everywhere. Even more interesting is that for at least 2,000 years before Ife, folk in the region around the Chad and Kaduna basins, people from the Isaber and its deltas, were at this from as far back as 3,000 BC. Can you just imagine how much skill it took to work clay and create the work we see today that is from hundreds of years ago? They were made with special mixtures of clay, charcoal, water, etc., and shaped with the aid of cores and molds. If you've ever seen a potter's wheel go wrong, you'll know that this is not a simple thing. It can really go all wrong. Next, we have the brass works. It is claimed that the brass skills were introduced by Obalufon II, remember? The Oni of Ife who ruled twice. In fact, there's a society, the Ogboni, who are said to be the patrons of brasswork. Such is its value. And their link to Obalufon is that it was during his reign that this society was able to rise to prominence. And due to that, to this day, as homage to his relationship and his successful reign, the coronation of Onis of Ife still have masks named after him. Then we have glass. Yep, glass. Ife had a glass industry that was up and running by at least, get this, the end of the first millennium AD. So that's like about the 10th century. Glass beads were a symbol of not just royalty and nobility, but also affluence across West Africa and of religion and culture. So kind of a big deal. Glass beads have an important role in Ife society as well as the wider Yoruba peoples. In fact, some Ife beads have been found as far west as modern-day Mali and even Mauritania. Most significantly, they were used to adorn symbols of authority. The civil ones, religious ones, especially in the brass and terracotta figures, which were also seen as symbols of nobility and royalty. It is very likely that this status stemmed from the fact that the manufacture of beads in Ife was deemed for the royal classes and the wealthy only. So from this would become the norm to identify those in high society who would be dressed in beads worn in the most elaborate ways. Because you know, Africans do not do plain and boring. Then we have the sculptures. The sculptures that came from the Ife are some of the most prized works in history. They are made from wood, ivory, copper, ceramic, brass, and bronze. They are so skillfully crafted using what is called the lost wax method. The lost wax method is a method of casting in which molten metal is poured into a mold that has been created by a wax model. Once the mold is made, the wax model is melted and drained away. And it is one of the oldest known metal forming techniques dating back like 6,000 years. The sculptures were made mainly from metals like brass or copper, some even from clay. These pieces are works of true art and skill. They are distinctive in their design, with the sculptors being quite lifelike as humans. Those depicting humans and deities had the heads as usually larger than the rest of the body, which is said to symbolize the importance of the head. The Ife sculptures had great influence over the Benin Kingdom from the 12th to the 15th century AD, and is claimed that the skills were taught to the royal artisans by those from Ife itself. When it comes to the trade and economy, as mentioned earlier, the capital that was Ife Ife was a major commercial and industrial hub in the region. Taking advantage of its physical location, it was situated strategically as the entrepôt, basically a fancy word that means port, city, or any other center to which goods are brought for import and export and for collection and distribution. Like, that's what an entrepôt is. Anyway, it was situated strategically as the entrepôt that was the intersection which linked various trade routes. Ife attracted people of all walks of life and professions, which only further enriched the lands. You had the forest traders coming from the south, bringing and collecting goods that were easily accessible. Then you have those that were coming in from the savannah and Sahara regions up north. And in addition, the location also was very useful for the trade linkage between the forest and port regions. Ife Ife was also a cultural center and enjoyed its status as both between AD 1000 and AD 1500. The kingdom traded in both regular and luxury goods, items like kola nuts, smoked fish, horses, peppers. Other high-end goods included gold, salt, jewelry, ivory, and metals such as brass and copper. The lands of Ife were quite fertile, and the people engaged in agriculture as sustenance as well as trade. Using their ironmongering and smelting skills to manufacture farming tools like hoes and various produce such as yams, palm oil, okra, and such like. It was also a manufacturing city on top of being this trade hub, and it manufactured brass, glass beads, and iron, having advanced technology when it came to manufacturing with these materials, as we mentioned earlier. With iron, we know how major the Iron Age was on our continent, and here ironworks played a major role in this civilization. It was used not just in agriculture, but also for weapons like swords, spears, and arrowheads, and even in artworks, construction, religious symbols, and so on. And speaking of religious symbols, there's an interesting thing that was discovered whilst doing the research, the Ogun Society. Now, for many, Ogun is known as a deity of war, but at Ife, he is the deity of war and iron. Although that kind of makes sense, right? And in fact, they're known to have very artistically designed iron staffs as part of the Ogun Society paraphernalia. Then, on top of manufacturing glass beads, we also saw the importance earlier with the royals, but they were also exported, and studies have found their unique signature across the region, in the savannah, forest areas, and even in the Sahara. This production and trade was happening way back, as early as the 9th century, with its peak coming between the 11th and 15th century. Some date the glass industry as far back as the late 1st millennium century AD. It was one of the major industries, and this is also in part due to the nature of the skilled craftsmanship, and so the distinct Ife-esque type of beadwork. What I mean by this is, the beads had a unique chemical composition, the mix of soda and potassium and other things, to be honest, that was very complicated to understand. But they had a very distinct physical trait, making them recognizable across the region. The beads from Ife, which were called shigi, came in various different colors, mostly shades of blue, but also black, deep reds, greens and grays, yellow and other multicolored shades. This, plus the different styles of beadwork, So like spirals, multicolored stripes, colored coated clear beads, different shapes, which are like tubular, cylindrical, could all be linked to the Ife with their craftsmanship and production value equal to any globally. When first found, it was thought that the Ife were importing glass, and the level of sophistication in the work was not to them original. But actually, it was. In fact, the beads were made from locally melted glass, and the Ife had large-scale production sites, trading out across the region and further afield. The production of these beads were part of the economic, political, social, and cultural boost and transformation of Ife's wealth and popularity internationally. The uniqueness and quality of the craftsmanship from the West African beads led to many coveting these beads, as well as lots of imitation as far across the seas as possible. The trade usually involved designated middlemen who worked along the trade routes that ran through Ife and crisscrossed from the coast to the interior West African kingdoms. So what the heck happened? I mean, it looks all good to go, right? How did this incredible kingdom succumb? The demise. Well, this was a slow decline, and one that had kind of many starts. I know that seems odd, but really it was a multitude of things that contributed to the end of the Ife kingdom's dominance. Some trace this to have been from about AD 1500, when their provinces started to agitate for independence. An example, although this story is from AD 1793, is that of the story of Alafin Awole of Oyo and the battles during his reign. And this is significant in the Ife dominance. It started with drama and a real affront as his beef, i.e. Alafin Awole, with the Bale of Apomu, which is an Ife town, came to a head when Oyo subjects were kidnapped in the market, and Awole then used this as an excuse to attack Apomu. This really didn't go far, as the Bale killed himself and his head was sent as an appeasement to Awole. I mean, that kind of like is a, you know, what's the word I was looking for? I was looking for a word. Anticlimax, that's it. That was like an anticlimax. Anyway, the story itself doesn't seem to have a link to the decline, but here's the thing. Both of these civilizations were part of the Ife sphere, and ordinarily, they would need to check in with Ife Ife to make such bold moves. The kidnapping, the attack, I guess even chopping off his own head. Well, they didn't, which showed that Ife Ife was losing its edge, or actually at this point had lost its edge. And then if we go a bit further later as well, in AD 1810 to about AD 1812, another action that was a trigger was that of Olowu of Owu, who was asked by the Alafin to take control of Ife towns on the outskirts, basically annexing them. And then Olowu did just that. I mean, the nerve, right? This time, Ife did take action, but their armies were defeated, like badly defeated. And actually, it was only when they recuperated and worked with the Ijebu, who brought their full force, ready to protect their own interests, because, you know, it was a threat to their wealth from the markets that were controlled by the Oyo-Uwo alliance, that they actually were successful. Now, upon all this, although this force, this joint force was successful, the very refugees, the Modakeke, who had turned on the Oyo and helped this effort, then turned on the Ife and took control of the city of Ibadan, where the Ife forces were. Like, it was a mess. This Oyo split was only one of the civilizations that caused the breakup of the Ife influence. Between AD 1500 and AD 1700, the Ijebu Benin, Tuo, Ketu were among the territories that the Ife lost control over. The two larger kingdoms of Benin and Oyo then went on to build and take over the lucrative trade routes of the Ife from the coast into the forest, savanna, and Sahara. Then the Oyo built up a massively impressive cavalry and became a military force to reckon with, one that the Ife could not contain. It became an empire on its own. And as all of this was happening, overlapping events just hitting Ife at once, or so it seemed, causing her to lose her capital's inhabitants to these new powerful states. In fact, some accounts say that Ife's numbers dwindled drastically and its territory shrunk from thousands to just a few hundred square kilometers. Ultimately, though, by AD 1882, after its forces had been defeated from the Modakeke, the kingdom never truly recovered and was a shadow of its former self as a dominant power in the region. However, not all doom and gloom. So although things didn't look great, this was not the complete end of the Ife kingdom's influence. Ife Ife, the spiritual home for the Yoruba, was still where the Ifa oracle was headquartered. And Ife Ife acted like the elder statesman in the affairs, be they spiritual, cultural, and political. It was held in such high esteem that there was a pact to keep the city safe and not attack it, and in fact actively protect it from any outsider attacks. Right. So, what else was going on in this period? As I said last time, this civilization spanned centuries, so a lot was going on in this period. So, here are just a few interesting ones just for you. So, at the Ife Kingdom's height, in the 12th century, between 1135 to AD 1154, there was civil war in England. In the 13th century, the Mongol Empire was established by Genghis Khan in AD 1220. The Zimbabwe Kingdom was founded. The Zagwe Dynasty of Aksum is replaced by the Solomonic Dynasty and modern Ethiopia founded. In AD 1235, the Mali Empire is born. In the 14th century, in Europe, the plague wiped out one third of their population. Meanwhile, Mansa Musa of Mali was the ruler, the richest man who ever lived. In the 15th century, AD 1438, the Inca Empire is founded. In 1440, Benin gains empire status. In AD 1469, the marriage of Ferdinand II of Aragon and Isabella of Castile leads to the unification of Spain. In the 16th century, AD 1599, the Malian Empire is defeated in the Battle of Genet. In the 18th century, in AD 1742 was the premiere of Handel's Messiah. In AD 1791 to AD 1804 was the Haitian Revolution. People, go and read about that. It's an amazing feat. In the 19th century, the Zulus were killing it in South Africa. We did an episode of that, so please check it out. And the evil that was a scramble for Africa that led to the greater evil of colonization began, coming out of the Berlin Conference of AD 1884 to AD 1885. As we wind down, I just wanted to mention something about the very rich culture and works of the Ife Kingdom that we heard about today. The famed sculptures from the Ife Kingdom had confounded the foreigners no end. The skilled works showed a level of expertise in the depiction of humans and other forms, not just in its artistry, but also in how the metal was manipulated to create these objects. The confusion was really just an unwillingness to accept, despite its being very obvious, because, you know, it's right in front of you, that this was the work of Black Africans using advanced technology, especially for that period, because it proved that our ancestors, and by extension us, are just dope and really true African genius. So as we bring it home, I really, 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 really love what I do, because as I was doing the research for this civilization, I found out something that is seemingly random that I honestly never knew and yet really spoke volumes about our African ancestors. It was about the history and making of glass, and of all things glass, really, in ancient Africa. Now, I wanted to finish off this civilization by highlighting this because it was such a dope fact to discover. The glass-making skills of our people has been ignored and not attributed fairly. Folk always speak of the Middle East, Asia, Europe, etc. And yet, this was one of the key skills, and a whole trade was made out of it right here on our continent. There was always the view that the Ife glass beads were imported glass. That's not true. Then it was the view that the craftsmanship was far too advanced for Africans. That's also not true. In fact, the big deal about glassmaking is that it shows how advanced Ife was in its technology and its society. It was an industry that existed for centuries, hundreds of years. So why bother with this random fact? Well, it's very simple. Not only is it a dope fact, but it is only just one microscopic example of the ingenuity and advanced technology our people are capable of. African genius. And now, with that little extra precious bead of information, this is a good place to end the show. So until next time, Mubarikiwe. Do what you do, yeah, I'll give you.